Well, good evening to each one. It's a pleasure to be with you again here at Calvary and to worship. I appreciated the devotional as well about being actively involved in our worship. Sometimes we do get lost in the form of it and our mind wanders. Well, I know Vernon wanted to know what I was going to preach about. And I didn't know for quite a while. I was preparing the sermon. I hardly knew what to call it, but eventually I got to the title here, What Can God See? And it's a message that's simple for everyone to understand. Even the children here can understand this message, I believe. And there's something for them here. What can God see? It's a simple question, but it's a profound question. And if you answer this question, how does it sanctify your life? How does it affect your life? What can God see? And we assume tonight that God has eyes, don't we? And how do we know what God's eyes look like? How do we know that God has eyes? You know, in our finite humanity, we strain to understand what God looks like. Well, we know we haven't seen God. We haven't seen his eyes. But we do know that God created man in his image. And so there we can get a little bit of a picture. What does God look like? Well, God has eyes. Now, how many eyes? How many eyes does God have? Maybe two eyes. I'd like to think it's more than one. God created us in his image. And so we can imagine what a God looks like. By looking in the mirror, we can see that we are created in his image, and I believe he has eyes. God can see. Well, what can God see? You know, man certainly has ideas about the eyes of God. And I could have brought you a lot of illustrations, but I'm going to show you one right now. About 150 years ago, astronomers discovered this Helix Nebula, they call it. And this is what it looks like. Now, you children here, if you saw that looking at you, would you think that was the eye of God? Well, that's what they nicknamed it. The nickname of this nebula is called the eye of God. Well, it looks like a human eye somewhat. So man has an idea of what God's eye should look like. We create this mental picture of what it looks like. There's also another eye of God that you probably don't think about that much, and maybe you're sitting on it tonight. Did you ever think about it? On your $1 bill? I'm going to draw this so that some of you can't see it and don't have that $1 bill because you put it in the offering this morning. If you can pull it out, if you want to pull it out, you can look at it. I'll draw it here on the whiteboard. That's a simple form of what it looks like on your dollar bill. On your dollar bill, you will see the front and the back of the Great Seal of the United States. And on the one side of that is an eye. It looks about like this. Underneath is an unfinished pyramid. And that unfinished pyramid has 13 layers of stone. Does anybody know why? Why would it have 13 layers? It's a history question. 13 colonies. Yeah, 13 colonies. At the top is this eye. Now, I preached this message at Strasburg this morning. Someone came after church, after service was over, and said, you think you're part of the Illuminati? Or see, this eye has been borrowed by the Freemasons. They use this eye. George Washington was a Freemason. I don't know how many of the founding fathers were. But that's not the point here tonight. Above this eye is written Latin, annuit coeptus. And what did they mean by that, annuit coeptus? Well, it means that providence has favored our undertakings. And so they have won the war. They've succeeded. And these people had the idea that the eye of God favored their undertakings. Well, that's not where they didn't invent this. The church was using this little motif in the Middle Ages. The Catholic Church, and I believe even some of the Orthodox churches, has used this. So they simply borrowed on that and put it on the Great Seal, and that's been on the $1 bill since 1935. God has favored our undertakings. And so man puts some stock in the eye of God, don't they? They want to be favored. Underneath that pyramid, by the way, there's some other texts that says, Novus Ordo Seclorum. And that means a new order for the ages. So man has created something new. God has favored their undertakings. And they have this eye of God. Now, this just doesn't mean anything. The triangle symbolizes the Trinity of God. And the rays out from that eye symbolize the divinity of God and his glory. And the eye itself symbolizes the omniscience of God. That's what it meant to the church in the Middle Ages. And of course, they borrowed it and put it over top the unfinished nation, the unfinished pyramid on the dollar bill. So be careful how you use the $1 bill. The eye of God is on that money. So man has an idea of what the eye of God means, right? Man has an idea of what it looks like, or what they think in their mind it looks like. What can God see? That's a different question, isn't it? Between what we think God's eyes look like and what can God see? Well, maybe we should ask the question, what can man see? Because for us as men to get any idea of what God can actually see, maybe we need to understand our own limitations. We go to the eye doctor and we get our eyes tested, and well, if we have 20/20 vision, we're good. And they test your peripheral vision. You probably have seen that. You see the little thing jumping around on the screen, and you're supposed to hit your button that you have. And man has about 170 degrees of peripheral vision. So man can only see about in front of him. He can't see behind him. And researchers say that a man with good vision on a dark night can see a candle burning at 1.6 miles. Now, they must not have any light pollution to outweigh the light of that candle. But I suppose it's true that in a very dark environment that you could see a candle flame in the night at 1.6 miles. That's a man with a good eye, a good vision. But man is not satisfied with seeing with his naked eyes. Man has never been satisfied with just seeing with his naked eyes. And for many years, and I don't know how many years it's been since the telescope has been invented, but it's been a long time. Man has invented machinery to look further and further, something that his eyes can't do. Binoculars and telescopes and microscopes and satellites that they put out in orbit to observe. In fact, for the last 30 years, there have been satellites circling the Earth, and I am told that their cameras are so good and their vision is so good that they can see a 6-inch object on the Earth. I have a customer that insisted that he worked on a project like that back, probably was the 70s. And he was telling me how astounding it was, how much they could actually see. Man wants to see more than what he can with his naked eyes, and in more places than what he can in front of him, than what's just in front of him. And just a couple years ago, they launched the James Webb Telescope out into orbit, 1 million miles from Earth. I can hardly even fathom this. And it orbits around the sun, and it's always in alignment so that the sun, the shadow of the Earth, I believe, is on it. I'm not sure how all that works. And I researched how far this telescope can see. And I almost hate to say it, because I don't know if man knows what he's talking about, but they claim they can see billions of light years into the past with their sensitive infrared cameras. And those cameras are so sensitive, that telescope is so sensitive, that it could pick up the heat of a bumblebee on the surface of the moon from the Earth. So man's not satisfied with seeing with his naked eyes. Man wants to see more and more. And not only into the distance, but He wants to see the small things. And so we have microscopes and we have electron microscopes, and they can look into down to the atomic structure, small atoms, which are only 1/10 millionth of a millimeter. 1/10 millionth of a millimeter. What does man want to see? How far can man see? What can man see with his naked eye? And what can man see with his equipment that he comes up with? Well, man even wants to see in the night too. They're not satisfied with just the daytime. And so they even have a night vision today. And I have some nephews that go hunting at night and they shoot predators. And they have night vision on their guns. You can see in the night. Well, it's not so good a vision. It's not perfect vision. But man wants to see. What can a man see? Well, that's about what a man can see. I've told you the extents. From the tiny little atom to things, I don't know how many miles, unspeakable amount of miles in space. These are the extents to which man can see in this universe. And we have to use equipment to do it. But what can God see? What about the eye of God? What about this eye? Or God's eyes? Well, we say God can see a lot more. God has supernatural eyes. God has eyes that defy human limitations. And that's because he's God. God's not limited in any way. But God can see the physical. God can see beyond the physical. God can see the spiritual as well. I was reminded of that this morning. I had written this in my notes and realized our Sunday school superintendent read the same thing. But when Samuel went to anoint David, and he came to Jesse and said, have your sons pass before me. And it says there in 1 Samuel 16, verse 6, that when it came to pass, when they were come, that he looked on Eliab, and he said, surely the Lord's anointed is before him. But the Lord said unto Samuel, look not on his countenance or on the height of his stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord seeth not as a man seeth. For man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart. And so there, Samuel was pretty well handicapped, was he not? He didn't know these boys, I don't believe, personally and in everyday life. And here he was looking at these men, and he was thinking, you know, which one would God choose? And all he could see was the outside. But God's eyes are not limited. God's eyes don't stop at flesh and blood. God's eyes can see the thoughts and the intents of the heart. And Eliab was not the one, even though he was tall, and even though he was good-looking, probably. Sometimes what's on the outside looks good, and what's on the inside is bad. Jesus accused the Pharisees of being full of dead men's bones. He could do that because he could see through flesh and blood. We can't do that. Well, God can see the spiritual, and that's a blessing to us tonight, that God can see the spiritual. Because the Bible says that we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. And God sees it all. God sees every bit of it. So when you're facing temptation, when you're facing the assaults of Satan on your life, God sees it. Because his eye goes beyond the physical, and he can see the spiritual realm around us. Well, a couple other characteristics about God's eyes. His eyesight is not limited by darkness, by distance, or even by time. It says in Psalm 139:11, if I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, even the night shall be light about me. Yea, the darkness hideth not from thee, but the night shineth as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to thee. So God doesn't need rods and cones in his eyes. Those of you know what I'm talking about. That we humans have to try to discern low light situations. But God says that the night shines as the day. It's just bright as day to God. God's eyes are in every place. We see that in Proverbs 15:3. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, beholding the evil and the good. In Job 28:23-24, God understandeth the way thereof, and he knoweth the place thereof, for he looketh to the ends of the earth and seeth under the whole heaven. So God's eyes are in every place. And how can God's eyes be in every place? Well, God inhabits eternity. And so God's eyes are in every place. And God's eyes are not even limited by time. Have you ever thought about that? That what I'm seeing is the present. And humans can only see the present. They can only see what's in front of them. But God is not. God's eyes aren't limited by time. He can see in the past as clear as it is today. And he can see in the future, in eternity, as clear as the present is to us, and maybe even clearer. God's eyes are not limited to time. God's eyes never close. God's eyes never get sleepy. They don't get droopy and fall shut, you know, like ours do. We drive down the road in mid-afternoon and that sun comes in and just warms you up and you want to fall asleep. God's eyes don't do that. In fact, we can remember Elijah when he was mocking the priest of Baal. What did he say? He mocked him. He said, "Cry aloud, for he is a god. Either he is talking, or he is pursuing, or he is in a journey, or peradventure he sleepeth and must be awaked." Implying that the God Elijah served never fell asleep. He never fell asleep. But he mocked them, saying that their God must be asleep. He must not be awake. Psalm 121, 3 and 4, "He will not suffer thy foot to be moved. He that keepeth thee will not slumber. Behold, he that keepeth Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep." And maybe you have your children say the little prayer, "Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray thee, Lord, my soul to keep." Now, why do we say that prayer? We say that because we assume that God never sleeps. And God keeps us through the night. Our God's eyes never close in slumber or sleep. In the last part of the message here, second part of the message, I want to look at how does God use his eyes. What are God's eyes busy doing? And what do they do in society? How do they affect people? And I have three main points, and there's probably many more, and probably each one of these could be a sermon in and of themselves, but what does God do with his eyes? What is he looking for? We ask, what can God see? Well, pretty well, he can see everything. But there's specific things that God does with his eyes. And the first point I have here is the eyes of God watch over his people. And that is the most blessed thought that we can have tonight in the eyes of God, that he is watching over us. In fact, the Bible says that God's eyes search out his people to strengthen them. And I'm going to take you back to 2 Chronicles. You don't have to turn there because I don't have time for it. But I'll tell you the little story that is written there in 2 Chronicles 14, where King Asa was faced with an impossible predicament. There were 1 million Ethiopian men at the border of his country invading him. 1 million Ethiopians. It's a huge army. And Asa counted as many, he only had 580,000 people. 580,000. And Asa cried to the Lord and he said, "Lord, you can do it." I'll put it in my own words. "You can do this. I cannot do this. But to you it's nothing," I believe is what he says. And Asa won that victory over 1 million Ethiopians with an army half the size because he cried out to God for help. And just a short time later, he was faced with a similar problem. And instead of crying out to God, he called to the Syrians and he said, "Come down and help me." And they did, and he won. But the prophet of God came to Asa afterwards and chided him for doing that. He said, "God could have helped you." And this is what he said about the eyes of God. He said, "For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong in behalf of them whose heart is perfect toward them." That's what the prophet told Asa. We have no need to be concerned about the pressing, difficult issues we face in life, because the eyes of the Lord are seeking out to strengthen us. Those who are loyal to him, that is. God's eyes are loyal to those who trust in him and rely on him for strength. God sees when your back is against the wall. God sees your most desperate moment. He has eyes, and his eyes are searching for you in that moment. And he's ready to help if we trust him. "For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong in the behalf of them whose heart is perfect toward him." What does God use his eyes for? To strengthen his people, to watch over his people. God's eyes notice everything. God's eyes notice every sparrow that falls. And you can be sure that they won't just casually glance over you when you're in difficult moments. God notices. God uses his eyes to search for his people and help them. God's eyes look down from heaven and search for those who believe on him. We have that verse twice, I believe, in Psalms. In Psalm 14:2, the Lord looked down from heaven upon the children of men to see if there were any that did understand and seek God. And there is the love and compassion of God that he's looking out for those who will trust on him. He was looking out for those who will seek him, who will seek to understand him. So that's what God uses his eyes for, to watch over his people and to look for those who believe in him. The Bible says that God watches over the land we live in. There in Deuteronomy 11, he told the Israelites, "The land whither ye go to possess it is a land of hills and valleys, and drinketh water of the rain of heaven, a land which the Lord thy God careth for. The eyes of the Lord thy God are always upon it from the beginning of the year even unto the end of the year." So God's eyes are watching over the lands that his people live in. And tonight we live in United States of America, we live in Pennsylvania, and we live here, locally, Chambersburg, Marion, Greencastle, and God's eyes are watching. God is looking out for the land in which his people live, and he blesses it. It says here, from the beginning of the year to the end of the year, that the eyes of the Lord thy God are always upon it. God watches over his people. God's eyes protect his people from evil. Psalm 32, verse 8 says, "I will instruct thee and teach thee in the way which thou should go. I will guide thee with mine eye." Would you trust a blind man to lead you tonight? If you didn't know where you're going, would you ask a man with a cane, the white cane, or with a seeing eye dog to lead you? It seems foolish, does it not? But God says, "I will instruct thee, I will teach you, I will guide thee with mine eye." And there is no better eye than the eye of God to guide us. An eye that can see behind us, and an eye that can see around us, and an eye that can see in front of us. Unlimited. It's a protecting eye. An eye that guides us in the right way. Guides us in the right path. Psalm 33, 18 to 20 says, "Behold, the eye of the Lord is upon them that fear him, upon them that hope in his mercy, to deliver their soul from death and to keep them alive in famine. Our soul waiteth for the Lord. He is our help and our shield." And so why is God watching us? Why is he guiding us with his eye? Well, he's going to lead us in the right path. He's going to keep us from those who would kill us, from famine, from the natural disasters in life. 1 Peter 3, 12 to 14, "For the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and his ears are open unto their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against them that do evil. And who is he that will harm you if you be followers of that which is good? But and if you suffer for righteousness' sake, happy are ye. And be not afraid of their terror, neither be troubled." So there we have, the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous. And we have no need to be afraid of people. We have no need to be afraid of the things that will harm us, because the face of the Lord is against them that do evil. And his eyes are over the righteous. The eyes of God watch over his people day in and day out, month by month and year after year. And those of you who are older here tonight can attest to that, that God has watched out for you. He's looked over you. He's looked over your family. There are times in your life where he spared you. God's eyes look out for his people. They run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong in behalf of those whose heart is perfect toward him. Well, point number two, how does God use his eyes? The eyes of God establish justice in the earth. The eyes of God establish justice in the earth. Have you ever thought that God's not really seeing what I'm seeing? And you look around you, and you see good people, innocent people, they're hurt, they're injured, they're in a bad way, they're oppressed. And you say, "Lord, don't you see? Can't you see it? And many people in the world use that as an argument today against God. Now look at all the evil in the world. Where is God? Where is a just God? Does he not see? Doesn't he see that all these abortions are killing innocent babies? And it just happens year after year after year after year, and it's been happening for decades and maybe even centuries. Most likely it has. Of course it has. Doesn't God see? Doesn't he see the young children in the broken homes that are getting abused? And doesn't he see the wife who's beaten by her husband? Doesn't he see the murdering and the jailing of his people in persecuted lands? Doesn't God see the horrific terrorist attacks that kill innocent people? And you could keep asking these questions. Doesn't God see what I can see? Because to me it looks unfair. To me it's not right. Does God see all of these things? Well, the answer is yes. God sees the injustices in this world, and he will right them. We can turn to Isaiah 59. We'll turn there tonight. I won't read this entire chapter. But the setting here is that Israel is in a dark place. Israel is in a place you could probably compare to our society today. And if we read these verses, you'll soon make that comparison. Does God see the injustice in the world? Isaiah 59, verse 9. Therefore is judgment far from us, neither doth justice overtake us. We wait for light, but behold obscurity. For brightness, but we walk in darkness. We grope for the wall like the blind, and we grope as if we had no eyes. We stumble at noonday as in the night. We are in desolate places as dead men. We roar all like bears and mourn sore like doves, and we look for judgment, but there is none, for salvation, but it is far from us. For our transgressions are multiplied before thee, and our sins testify against us, and our transgressions are with us. And as for our iniquities, we know them. In transgressing and lying against the Lord and departing away from our God, speaking oppression and revolt, conceiving and uttering from the heart words of falsehood, and judgment is turned away backward. And justice standeth afar off, for truth is fallen in the street, and equity cannot enter. Yea, truth faileth, and he that departeth from evil maketh himself a prey. And the Lord saw it, and it displeased him that there was no judgment. And he saw that there was no man, and wondered that there was no intercessor. Therefore his arm brought salvation unto him, and his righteousness it sustained him. For he put on righteousness as a breastplate, and a helmet of salvation upon his head. And he put on the garments of vengeance for clothing, and was clad with zeal as a cloak. According to their deeds, accordingly he will repay fury to his adversaries, recompense to his enemies. To the islands he will repay recompense. I'll just continue reading there. So we have a land and a society where justice was gone, where judgment was gone, where truth was gone, no equity, people being beaten down and oppressed and afflicted. Does God see? Does God see? It says here, and the Lord saw it, and it displeased him that there was no judgment. And furthermore, he saw that there was not even a man who would be an intercessor for the righteous. And so what did he do? He took it in his own hands. And his arm brought salvation, and his righteousness sustained him. And he clothed himself with vengeance. He was clad with the zeal. And he repaid his adversaries for their lack of justice. And the simple point here is tonight that God's eyes do not pass over the affliction of his people. God sees the brokenhearted, the beaten down, the beggar, the slave, the persecuted Christian, the orphans, the widows. You put in that blank. God will not pass over the affliction of his people. Back in Exodus 2, we just had this in our Sunday school lesson about the children of Israel in the land of Egypt. And this is what it said in Exodus 2, 23 to 25. And it came to pass in the process of time that the king of Egypt died, and the children of Israel sighed by the reason of the bondage, and they cried. And their cry came up unto God by reason of the bondage. And God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. And God looked upon the children of Israel, and God had respect unto them. God's eyes brought justice to the children of Israel. Psalm 34, 15 and 16 says that the eyes of the Lord are upon the righteous, and his ears are open unto their cry. The face of the Lord is against them that do evil, to cut off remembrance of them from the earth. And so woe is you tonight if you are the oppressor. Woe is you tonight if you are the one afflicting the anguish and the pain on other human beings, because God's eyes see. It doesn't matter how strong of a nation you are, God will see. And he says that in Psalm 66, 7. He ruleth by his power forever. His eyes behold the nations. Let not the rebellious exalt themselves, because God sees. God's eyes saw Egypt, one of the greatest nations on earth, oppress his people. And he afflicted them for it. His fury was poured out upon them. Psalm 102, 19 to 21, for he hath looked down from the height of his sanctuary. From heaven did the Lord behold the earth, to hear the groaning of the prisoner, to loose them that are appointed to death, to declare the name of the Lord in Zion and his praise in Jerusalem. That is a beautiful promise to those who are beaten down and are trodden down by all the institutions and the injustices of man, that God looks down from heaven and to hear the groaning of the prisoner and to loose those that are appointed to death. That's what the eyes of the Lord are doing. The eyes of the Lord are in every place, beholding the evil and the good. No evil thing will escape his eyes. And God will judge righteously because he is witness. No one will tell God that nobody has seen. No one will tell him that you didn't see. Because with his piercing eyesight, God has seen it all. And there's no escape. Well, the last point I have here is, how does God use his eyes? God's eyes bring accountability to men. And we talked a little bit about that already. The eyes of God bring accountability to men. Now, you children here tonight, what happens when you're misbehaving and your mom or your dad look at you? It settles some things, doesn't it, in your mind? It brings accountability in your mind and in your actions. The look that your parents give you tell you a lot of things. But the eyes of God do as well. The eyes of God bring accountability to men. Even the government has tried to bring accountability to men with surveillance of about everything. And we live in the age of surveillance. And we don't think about it that often, do we? And where we go and what we do, there's cameras watching you. Now, and if you go too fast out of the city of Hagerstown, I can tell you there's cameras watching you. Because a few days later, you're going to get a bill in the mail, and they're going to charge you $40 for speeding. Why does the government do that? It's to bring accountability to men. Yeah, there's not a police officer there to watch you. But there's a camera there. And of course, we talked about the satellites where they monitor the earth and the activities of men. A few years ago, you remember the whole stories about wiretapping and what the government could tap into. And I've been told, even in today's world, that anything that pretty much has a circuit board in it can be tapped into. And I'm not here to promote conspiracy theories. But we know that the government surveils people. They do. And why do they do it? They do it to bring accountability, and people despise them for it. And I'm not here to say that if they're out of step or not, or whether it's constitutional, that's none of our business. But people despise the government for doing that. But they forget that they can never escape the eye of God. Men are so busy today hiding things from other people, from the government, from whoever. We'll talk about a few of the people they try to hide from. That they forget that there's a God who has eyesight much better than anything they can ever think of, and that he can see them. And I think for us as Christians here tonight, it's good that we remind ourselves of that. brings accountability to our life. It sanctifies our life. To understand that God has eyes that can see. And I think every sinner on earth has tested God's eyesight, have they not? Adam and Eve, what did they do? They hid. Because they didn't think, or maybe they weren't thinking in the moment, that God's eyes could actually see them. Every sinner has tried it, I believe. Achan thought he could hide his sin in the middle of his tent in the ground. He'd dig a hole, and nobody could see. David tried to cover up his sin with Bathsheba by going to extra lengths to kill the rightful husband. Men try to hide, but God's eyes will always see them. Always. And you children can understand that as well. That God always sees what you do. Job 34, 21 and 22 says, "For his eyes are upon the ways of men, and he seeth all his goings. There is no darkness nor shadow of death where the workers of iniquity may hide themselves." Jeremiah 16, 17, "For mine eyes are upon all their ways. They are not hid from my face, neither is their iniquity hid from mine eyes." And so the sinner tonight believes that he can hide from God. He can hide lots of things. We'll talk about some of those. The question for us is, what am I hiding from God? Let's make it personal. What am I hiding from God? What have you hidden from your parents? Maybe you think mom and dad don't need to know what you're doing, where you're at. And you can hide from them. You might be able to. You might be successful, but God sees the intents of your heart. God sees what you're doing. And maybe you think that whatever you do on your phone, you're hiding. Nobody knows. And somebody said this morning after the message that they think that the phone's probably the greatest test for what you believe about the eyesight of God. And it's probably true. What are you hiding from God? No one can see what I'm doing. Oh, really? God can see. His eyes don't stop at anything. Maybe you're away from your home congregation and your preachers can't see what you're doing. And you can hide a few things, can't you? And they may never find out. But are they the only ones that are looking? God is looking as well. And maybe you're hiding things from the government. Maybe you like to hide some things in your taxes. A lot of people like to do that. They like tax accountants that know how to hide things. Make things disappear, you know. But God knows. God can see. What are you hiding from your spouse tonight? That's a serious question. There are many men in this world, and I'm sad to say even a few in the church, that try to hide things from their spouse, from their marriage partner. And a number of years ago, there was a website that was hacked. And that website existed for the sole purpose to cheat on your spouse, secretly. And somebody hacked that website and revealed the names of all the people that were in there. And I remember at the time, and the rich and the famous were upset. Why? Because it was brought to light. They were hiding something. And I think God, in his judgment, he did what he did. God's eyes brought it to light. But what are we trying to hide from our spouse? Proverbs 5, 20 to 22, and this is talking about the subject. "And why wilt thou, my son, be ravished with a strange woman, embrace the bosom of a stranger? For the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord. And he pondereth all his goings. His own iniquity shall take the wicked himself, and he shall be holden with the cords of his sins." And let's face it tonight, we are human beings. We are in the flesh just like anybody else in the world. But let's be real, that God sees what we're hiding, what we try to hide. And why is it that we try to hide when we know that God sees everything? Christians try to hide things, even though they know that God sees things. Why are we so desperate to save face among our brethren, but risk our souls before God? Why? Why? Why do we do that? We know that God can see, and we know that God knows our hearts. Men love darkness rather than light because their deeds are evil. Guilt drives us into darkness. Guilt drives us into secrecy and hiding the sin in our life. But God can see. God can see. For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit, and of the joints and marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart. Neither is there any creature that is not manifest in his sight, but all things are naked and opened unto the eyes of him with whom we have to do. And tonight, at some point in your life, you will engage the one with whom you have to do. And all things will be exposed because God's eyes are perfect. He does not miss anything. And we cannot hide anything. At the end of time, all things will be exposed. And it's much better that if we lose our pride and lose our face among our brethren, but save our soul, because we know God sees what we do. 1 Corinthians 4:5, therefore judge nothing before the time until the Lord come, who both will bring to light the hidden things of darkness and will make manifest the counsels of the hearts, and then shall every man have praise of God. Make manifest the counsels of the hearts. You know, we're pretty happy tonight that we can think things in our, those around us can't understand, they can't know it, they don't know it. And maybe that's a blessing. Maybe there's a reason why God allowed that to be. Probably is. But the danger in it is that we believe that he won't understand. He won't reveal it. But it says that he will. He will bring to light those hidden things of darkness and make manifest the counsels of the hearts. Well, what do the eyes of God look like to you tonight? The book of Revelation describes the eyes of the Son of Man. I just want to read those three instances there. Revelation 1:14, where it's describing the Son of Man. It says, his head and his hairs were white like wool, as white as snow, and his eyes were as a flame of fire. Revelation 2:18, and unto the angel of the church in Thyatira write, these things saith the Son of God, who hath his eyes like unto a flame of fire. Revelation 19:11-13, and I saw heaven opened, and behold, a white horse, and he that sat upon him was called Faithful and True. And in righteousness he doth judge and make war. His eyes were as a flame of fire, and on his head were many crowns, and he had a name written that no man knew but he himself. And he was clothed with a vesture dipped in blood, and his name is called the Word of God. There we have a description of the eyes of the Son of Man as a flame of fire. A consuming fire, a penetrating light. There is energy there. There is, we just had the Sunday school lesson this morning about Moses in the burning bush. Okay? Why does God present himself in the form of fire at times? And just let you ponder on that. I'm not going to go into that. But it says here, the Son of Man's eyes were as a flame of fire. Nothing will escape these eyes. Nothing will escape those eyes at the end of time. Well, in conclusion, the eyes of God, the piercing eyes of God, are a strength. They're a protection and they're a comfort to his people. And I'm not here to scare you tonight with ending up a sermon this way. And maybe I shouldn't apologize, because that's, you need to think about that in the eyes of God. But tonight, if you are a loyal follower of him, his eyes are there to comfort you, to protect you, to be a strength for you. He will look out for you. But tonight, if you're a sinner and you love darkness, and there are many men in this world today who love darkness, the eyes of God are a fearful thing. They are a terrible thing. And they are destruction to you. They are judgment to you, because they will reveal everything you wanted to conceal. And I just pray that we go through life and we allow the eyes of God to sanctify us, because it will. You think twice. God is watching. God can see. May the Lord bless you. Let's kneel for prayer.